But in another sense, that's why God has brought me through all this, is so I can be that one person to say, okay, look, you may have went to jail 100 times. You may have been addicted to everything on earth. You may have, but if I can do it, anybody can do it. Literally anybody.
Welcome to the Corey Lee Show. I am your host, Corey Lee. This is a podcast where we are sharing stories and journeys of experience, strength, and hope. The rags to riches, the unconventional ways that people found God, and the miracles of hitting rock bottom, overcoming adversity, and building lives of meaning, service, and faith. I hope today's story moves you, opens your heart, and inspires you to see how God is moving in your life. Enjoy the show. Okay, so Jody, your story is crazy. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to hear all of it. So you were hit by a truck and it was parked on your legs in 2018. And that then led you into a wheelchair for a year, addicted to pain meds, drinking every day, ended up overweight and depressed, hit rock bottom, God saved you, and now you've gone on to live a life of a living ministry, a living, walking ministry. You train women, personal trainer, wrote a book, all the things. That is in a nutshell. So what happened in 2008?
So I was walking across the parking lot at my job, and I was literally just walking to my car to get something out of my car. And when I was walking back in, this guy was just on his phone. He wasn't paying attention, and he hit me and knocked me over and drove up on top of my legs. And he honestly didn't even realize that he had parked on top of me. I had to twist around and beat on his truck, screaming, "Get off me, get off me." And then he backed back over me. So, yeah, that's what happened.
So, okay, when one of the, okay, the thing within this show is this was the concept is inspired by recovery meetings, and we share experience, strength, and hope, and we share what it was like, what we did, and what it's like now. So as I'm pulling apart this story, but prior to 2008, what was life like for you?
I mean, so honestly, this was my third like crazy accident. When I was 14, I went to the doctor for strep throat. They gave me 2 shots in my hip without making me sit down. And I fainted in the lobby, fractured my skull, busted my eardrum. I had 4 blood clots on my brain. I spent 11 days in the hospital. So that was my first traumatic experience. And then when I was 19, I had a drunk driver hit me in a head-on collision. And so I was going to pain management, and I was on pain medicine for a duration of time for that accident. And I had recently gotten sober. I was doing great. I was working. I was doing the thing. And then that truck hit me, and I had very extensive injuries. I had to go to wound care for about 6 months. And if you know anything about like third degree burns, they were very extensive burns on my calf muscle and my ankle. And that was like just excruciating pain. And if you've ever recovered and then relapsed, your relapse is always way worse than your initial addiction. So yeah, I relapsed, and I was just going through, you know, extensive rehabilitation. I went through extensive treatments, extensive wound care, and it was just excruciating. It was so painful. And so my addiction just got really bad, and I got to where I was taking a handful of pills just to open my eyes and get through the day. So yeah, it was pretty traumatic. So yeah, I had just gotten sober. I was living good, and then got hit by a truck and relapsed.
Like literally hit by a truck. So when you look back on addiction, do you identify as an addict?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When you look back on your history with addiction, when did it start? Has it been something that you've struggled with your whole life?
Both my parents drink, so substance abuse is huge in my and on both sides of my family. I think everyone in on both sides of my family has either drank or taken some sort of substance. So I think it's predisposed, like I have a predisposition for an addiction anyway. And then when I was 17, I had a boyfriend of 3 years die in a car accident, and that's when I really started just kind of experimenting with drugs. And I mean, when you have an addictive personality, you don't just experiment with drugs. You like do all the drugs and did a lot of them. And I was pretty wild and crazy for a long time. And then, like I said, I got sober and I was working, I was doing good. And then boom, ran over me.
And that first time you got sober before 2018's hit by a truck accident, how did you know you needed to or desired to get sober then?
So 2008 was when I got hit by the truck. I don't know. I've always had a sense of purpose in my life. I've always felt like God was tugging at me to do something big and to do something more. And so that's really always been my biggest motivation, is just knowing that God been with me through all of this. And I've always known I wasn't supposed to just be a trailer park baby. I always knew I was gonna go bigger and do more. And I've always told my family, like, I just feel like I'm meant for something bigger.
And for you, like I remember when you say that, that was like this for me, that was a plaguing feeling before I got sober. Like it was a haunting earring. Like I knew I was from here for more, but what was the experience of knowing you were here for more like for you when you before you got sober?
Just, I felt guilty all the time. It was just like a, you're not supposed to be doing this, but you keep doing it anyway, kind of thing. And it just finally, I finally got to that point where I was sick of myself, that feeling. It's like, why do I keep doing the same thing over and over? And I know I feel like crap. Like, I know I'm not supposed to be doing this. I know I'm supposed to be doing more.
So, okay. Then 2008. So this guy is texting. That what was that like for you? Like in the moment of being hit by an actual truck and a truck on you, you're a small person, and like any human being is going to be small in comparison to a truck, but like you're a small person. What was that like in the moment where there was a truck on top of you and you're banging on it to get all the hell off of your body?
Traumatizing. It was scary. I mean, I had to get on like Xanax after that because I was just terrified to walk in a parking lot for a long time after that. And still to this day, I get kind of jumpy with my boys. I have two sons. I have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I mean, ever since they've been toddlers, if we're walking across a parking lot, I'm firing on all cylinders, looking around, making sure there's nobody even close to them. So it was
Sure.
very traumatic.
So you get knocked over. This truck is on top of you. You're like, get off of me. He rolls off of you. And then what? Did somebody else call the ambulance? Did you call the ambulance? Did he call? What happened then?
Yeah, my coworkers ran outside and they called the ambulance and just were checking on me, making sure I was okay. I was actually on the phone with my husband during the whole thing and he just heard me screaming, "Get off me, get off me." He said, "I thought somebody like threw a spider on you or something." And he said, "I didn't know what you were screaming, get it off of me for." And then somebody picked up the phone. They're like, "You need to get here now. Your wife, Jody's been run over by a truck." And he's so, yeah.
Okay, so then you go to the hospital, and then what was the hospital? What happened at the hospital? How long were you there? What did they do?
Honestly, I wasn't there long. They checked to make sure nothing was broken. I had huge third-degree burns on my calf muscle. My ankle bone went through the skin. And so naturally at the ER, they just treat your symptoms. So they just bandaged me up. They sent me home. I had this huge cast on my leg And then I went to ortho like the following Monday. And then I also started wound care. So I actually went through wound care for about 6 months, and I treated my left leg while my right leg was the predominant one. And the whole time I kept saying, my knee is hurting. Like, I feel something wrong with my knee. And x-ray didn't show anything, MRI didn't show anything, but I just kept telling them, I feel something grinding in my knee. So they finally did like an exploratory laparoscope, and they found that my kneecap was shattered. And so they had to go in and suck out a bunch of knee bone debris that was in there that they couldn't see in the images. And so after the knee surgery, I just had to try to kind of go from one leg to the other if I walked at all. So yeah, I was in a wheelchair for a good year because I couldn't walk on both legs for a long time. And then I finally was able to bear weight on both legs at the same time, and I started walking on a cane. I had a hot pink cane. And I remember just, I was so miserable. And I had been told for 5 years that I couldn't have kids. We had always been told I had all these female problems. And they're like, just give up. You can't have kids. And so I was going to have a hysterectomy, and we got pregnant. And so I had hope. I'm like, well, we can get pregnant. And then I had a miscarriage because I was just so unhealthy. And I mean, it was a horrible time for me to have a baby, to even carry a baby full term. I was so unhealthy. I was overweight. I was living in my addiction. So hindsight, God knew that was not the right timing, but at the same time, God gave me that desire to better myself. That was like my, okay, like you can't carry a baby right now because you're not healthy enough. I was so depressed and distraught from that. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give up. I'm just gonna apply for disability. Whatever. They're telling me can't have kids. They're telling me I'm never gonna be able to do the things I want to do anymore. So I'm just gonna apply for disability. And I got denied for disability. And I was like, okay. Well, I guess this is where I have to do something about my life. So I just, God kept pushing and tugging on me, on my heart, and I was still getting up, taking pain medicine every day, but I was trying to take less and less. And then I just started pushing myself to get up and walk. And so my first exercise was to hold canned vegetables. And I walked from one end of my house to the other until I couldn't anymore. And that was my first workout ever.
This is so amazing. It's really interesting to hear you share this story because when we're in the forest, we can't see the trees, but we can see like hindsight or somebody else looking in. And the way that you describe the God shots the whole way through, like the fact that you couldn't get disabilities is like insane. Or is it God? Like, where was God really like, Jody, this isn't your ending. This isn't where you're not laying down here. Like, your mess is going to be used as medicine for somebody else. Keep going. We need you to walk.
Absolutely.
Okay. You had one ankle that had the bone sticking out. Was the knee shattered in that same ankle? Okay. So this other ankle, and then the third degree bone burns were on both or one?
One
Okay.
entire calf muscle was covered.
So you're in obviously excruciating pain. You're in a wheelchair, and you're going through the hospital has sent you home. You're doing pain management, rehab, osteo. What was the year of living in a wheelchair? What was happening to you spiritually and emotionally, as well as your addiction?
I don't remember much spirituality during that time, to be honest. I was just living in my addiction. Like I said, I just remember waking up. I knew I would have to take like a handful of pills. I was drinking vodka every day, just like it was nothing, like it was water. And I would just lay in the bed and play my Nintendo Wii. I'd play like all these like shooting games. I played like Cabela, Dangerous Hunts, and what's the other one? Call of Duty. Like I beat all the Call of Duty games because I think I was just mad. And like that was kind of like my coping. It was the only thing I could do. But then I remember kind of getting out of the darkness. I started teaching myself. Like I taught myself how to paint. I bought a book that I taught myself how to paint. And then I started getting really crafty. Like I made some mosaic lamps out of wine bottles and I was selling them for like $80. I mean, they were like really nice mosaic lamps. And I did these mosaic tables for people and sold them because my husband was in construction. So he had all this extra tile. So I just started kind of doing what I could. So I think I started trying to find ways like, okay, I know I'm not useless. I know I can make the most out of my situation. And so I just started gradually doing that.
So from a place of being in your bed and drinking and taking pills and feeling hopeless and playing the shooting games to starting to learn to paint and teach yourself things and the mosaics and like the beginning of the rise out of the darkness, what was it for you that had that switch inside that said, we can't just lay here, we've got to make a mosaic?
I don't know. It was obviously spiritual. I didn't realize it at the time. My mom has always been very big in praying for me and speaking scriptures over me. She's been that way my entire life, but she also drinks every day too. So I've kind of had a jaded view of what Christianity looks like. What does it look like to be like a true Christian? And so I've kind of had to just paint my own picture like you have. People want to paint Christianity as being perfect, and that's not Christianity at all. And then they throw religion in there as if, you know, you can pick and choose what Christianity you want to be and what type of box you want to put it in. And I'm just kind of like you. I don't really have a religion. I don't really have any specific thing that I go by other than my relationship with God and the fact that I know for a fact he has saved me way more than once. He's never allowed me to fully give up on myself. And so after I had started walking and I was living in my addiction, I started getting in trouble with the law a lot. I went to jail. I mean, a lot. I don't even know how many times I went to jail. But the last straw, pretty much, I was already on probation because I went to the hair salon and forgot to pay for some conditioner because I was on pills and just whatever. And I got arrested for that. And it was kind of like, I was so aggravated. Like, why didn't they just call me and tell me that I needed to pay for that? But then I got on probation for that. And it was like a month or so later, I went to Walmart and I was just like so oblivious. Like I was obliterated. And I tried to walk out of Walmart with a whole buggy full of stuff. Like just, I was not even registering what I was doing. And I remember sitting in that security office and that cop saying, if this exceeds $300, it's a felony. And so he's just sitting there scanning everything. And I'm sitting there praying, God, please don't let it go over $300. Please don't let it go over $300. And it didn't. It was like $290-something. And I was like, thank you, God. You know, like, so, oh my gosh, I was freaking out. But I mean, like in that moment, God's like working on me. He's okay, here's another thing. I'm like saving you. You're getting by. And so I finally went to court for that. And my probation officer and the judge both were like, look, Jody, you've got to make a decision. You're about to go to jail for a long time or you got to go to rehab. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll do rehab. So they sent me to a 7-day inpatient rehab facility and I fought tooth and nail because I was still addicted to pills. I was still getting prescribed pain medicine. I still had legitimate pain. And so I was playing the system. I'm like, I called my doctor, I called my PO and I got out of there. I did not stay the whole time. I didn't do the whole 30-day thing. I made 7 days of detox and then I got out. So they finally agreed to let me do an outpatient rehab through the court system. And it was like a 4 to 5 month thing where I would have to go to a class like every single day. We went to AA meetings. I got drug screened randomly all throughout the week. But in the same time, I was still getting prescribed pain medicine. They knew I was on pain medicine. I knew how to play the system. I knew how much water I needed to drink. I was taking azos. I knew how to hide what I was doing, and I was not doing it right. I was not doing it right at all. But in the same sense, God was still working on me, because I'm having to go to all these AA meetings. I'm having to listen to all these people's stories. I'm having to sit through all this and fake it. And it was just like so long. It was just so many years I was like faking it, trying to do right, trying to prove myself like, okay, I know I'm a good person, but I'm addicted and I have pain, and I'm trying to justify myself. Like, I need the pain medicine. I need the anxiety medicine. I need the alcohol. And while I'm going through MADAC, while I'm going to all these AA meetings, God's planting seeds. He's planting tiny seeds. And although I was rebellious the entire time, I was not having it. I'm like, whatever, I'll just do what y'all want me to do. I'll show whatever you need to see on paper so I can get off this court stuff so I can go back to living in my addiction. But no, God did not let me do that. He just kept convicting me and convicting me and convicting me. And finally, they finally just give me like a certification for that outpatient thing. I didn't complete it. I didn't graduate it. My probation officer finally signed off on my probation because she loved me to death. Like, she knew I was a good person. And funny story is, I went and saw her a year or two ago, and she bought one of my cookbooks, and she's just right. She brought me down to the judge. She's like, and he's, oh yeah, I remember her. How could you forget her? And they're like, just talking about how amazing I'm doing and how awesome it is to see people that come through there that were living that type of way to living how I am now. It's just unheard of, honestly. But in another sense, that's why God has brought me through all this, is so I can be that one person to say, okay, look, you may have went to jail 100 times. You may have been addicted to everything on earth. You may have, but if I can do it, anybody can do it. Literally anybody.
Oh man, I feel like I just want to burst into tears. I love a solid story. To get into recovery is so rare. It's the thing, it always makes me cry, because we're so rare. It is so lucky for us to get into recovery, and denial is such a huge part of an addict. Like, we didn't even know we're lying to ourselves. We're doing this thing that is beyond our comprehension and control, and it's so powerful. So when did you hit rock bottom in this? What was the moment where you were like, things need to change?
Well, when they told me you either have to go to jail or do rehab, that was kind of like one rock bottom. I've had so many rock bottoms, and it's like, what was the actual bottom? I really don't know. I think I tell a story sometimes, the time when I was trying to get sober. I remember I was walking on a cane. And I remember saying, okay, I want to go to the zoo and I want to walk the entire zoo without taking a pain pill. And zoos are big, so it took a long time. And I was so mad. Oh, I sat down. I cried. I cussed. I screamed. I was just angry. I was hot. I was tired. I was mad. But I made it through that whole zoo walk without taking a pain pill. But I just remember being so upset, like, why can't I just live a normal life? I just want to go walk around the zoo without wanting to take a pain pill the whole time. And I think that was just a huge wake-up call for me. You've got to get out of this. It's toxic. You can't stay on pain medicine every day. You can't get on disability. You can't give up. So I think that was a pivotal moment because at the same time, I had had the miscarriage, got denied disability, and here I am trying to see what life looks like out of my addiction. And it sucked. It sucked bad. And so I'm like, is this even going to be worth the fight? But like I said, I really don't remember like a time. If I could remember any time, it would be that day. That day was huge for me because I wanted it bad. I wanted to be sober bad. But I was in so much pain. I haven't talked about it, I guess.
Jody, when the tears come up for you right now, what is the emotion that is associated? What do you feel right now?
Just knowing that so many people feel hopeless. Addiction is such a hopeless and helpless feeling.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling so mad. Like, why can't I just change?
Oh, so relatable. I relate so much to that feeling. If you could go back and if on the quantum field where past, present, and future are all actually existing in one time, if the Jody now, right now, could go back to the Jody that was sitting on that bench in the zoo with her pink cane, just cursing at life, what would you say to her?
Don't give up. Keep going. Keep fighting.
Isn't it, I don't know how you feel about this, but I look back at these moments of, I think about this a lot, how hopeless it actually is and how, you know, the world tells us we need to have hope and we need to see it to achieve it. And in a rock for an addict that's flirting with and being taken over by rock bottom, there's no hope to say, well, I'll just take one more step. And yet something inside of us does it. It's what you keep referring to, that God is working, planting seeds, working. And it's like everything inside of us wants to die or give up. And something inside is like one foot. Something inside has a flame of hope that's greater than our despair, even though our despair is so, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like people have higher powers or whatever, and mine has always been God. I don't know any other higher power than God and Jesus. So I think I don't understand how people get through life without Jesus, honestly. I don't understand it at all, but you know, to each his own. But I know that I'm here to show people that there is a God, and it doesn't matter how far gone you are or how lost you feel, like he will find you in the depths of your despair and he will pull you out. And while we're telling our story now, saying have faith, God can get you out of that. But I like how you're just like taking pieces of it. You're getting me to explain how I process this and tell you the emotions that I felt, because I haven't talked about it. You know what I mean? This is very therapeutic for an addict. So
it is. What's even crazier, I'm just going to just continue to cry here, is the power of a conversation like this. Somebody listening to this, it'll save their life. Even if it's just one person. And that's the power of an addict to an addict, of sharing our experience, strength, and hope, and what it was like and how hopeless it was. Somebody out there will hear it and think, well, I could take one more step. If Jody can take one more step, then I can take one more step.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what happened? So it's over. Keep going, Jody.
It's no mistake that God brought you and I together. Because my name's Jody Lee, and it's spelled J-O-D-I, and my middle name's not spelled like yours, but it's just crazy. We have a lot of similarities.
Well, there are conversations like this. I could feel exactly in the moment. It'll be interesting re-listening to the actual replay of this when the energy, like, thickened and softened. And it was like God is sitting here having a conversation with us. when the tears start flowing, and it's, but for the grace of God, we're just like this small percentage of people that got sober and that lived to tell the story.
Yeah.
And that's our mission. Like that's what your primary purpose is now. That's what you're here to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you get sober, you're walking. Tell us now, life, what happened then? The hope side of the experience, strength and hope.
Yeah. So I've been a fighter. I mean, gosh, ever since my first accident, I've just always been a fighter. Like I'm not going to give up. And the devil really had me in that last one because I was going to give up. And so I was at home. My husband and I were so poor. We had just had our first son, and I was stuck at home with our son while he was gone working. And I had lost 85 pounds after my accident. So I lost 85 pounds, got fit, got pregnant, had my rainbow baby, and I was stranded at home. And I had such a desire for fitness. I'm like, I'm going to get my fitness certification. And I didn't have the internet or a computer. So I carried my baby to my neighbor's house every day, and I used her computer, and I got my fitness certification. And then after I did that, I got a laptop, my old laptop that I had from college, got it out, and I just started typing my devotional cookbook. Mm-hmm. And I started a business, and I brought my son with me everywhere I went. Finally got a car. I had clients come to my house. They would work out with me here, or I would bring my son to their house and work out with them there. And that's just how I started my business. And now I do online coaching. I started online coaching about 2 years ago. So I've been in fitness about 12 years. I did personal training. I had my own personal fitness journey for about 2 years. And then I've been a personal trainer for 10. And then I've been an online coach for 2. And God has just opened so many doors for me in the online space. I mean, like, the sky's the limit when it comes to social media and having an online presence. And it's like, I try to tell people all the time, if you're not living in being a content creator or like an online coach, like, you cannot see what we see. Like, you just see a post. You're like, oh, she posted something else again, whatever. I'm like, but you don't realize I have people all the time messaging me. I just want you to know I've been following you for a long time, and your story is so powerful. You're so inspiring. I just want to tell you I'm so thankful for your post. Even if there's nobody that likes it, like, I'm still getting people all the time that tell me how much I affect them, and how, you know, just showing up every day is affecting them in their life and in their journey. So I love the online space. I used to hate it. I used to be so against it. I'm just like, oh, I hate having to post all the time. I hate having to try to come up with stuff. It's daunting, it's annoying, and it's redundant. But once I realized the potential in it, and I started seeing the return, the same thing as fitness. I have a schedule. I just post and I do my thing. And even if I don't feel like it, I know I have a structured schedule. I'm going to do it anyway, kind of thing. So that's just how I am with business. I look up to people like you, and I invest into different courses. So I'm continually learning. I'm continually growing. And being an addict, you have to keep your mind busy. So I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly getting more knowledgeable and how to grow as a person and as a business owner and an entrepreneur and a fitness coach and all the things. So I'm constantly growing and learning and being fed as well by people like you who are just inspiring, and I can relate to you and what you're saying and how you're feeling. And so it's just an awesome thing.
It's an amazing, I think it's really cool when we can see how God operates through something like Instagram to make the connections. And like you said, to have Oh, a post I didn't feel like posting that maybe nobody liked. And then all of a sudden there's a DM that says, you changed my life. You saved my life. This is what I woke up and this gave me the inspiration to stay sober or to go to the gym or to show up for my children. Or it's, wow, it really matters. And God is really working through people.
Right.
So tell us about the book that you wrote, that you said it's a cookbook. But you also said it's a devotional.
Yeah. I know. God gave me this crazy idea to do a devotional cookbook, and it had never been done before, not that I knew of anyway. So I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know how I was going to publish it or write it or anything. So I just started writing the recipes down. And initially, it was just, I had tons of people asking me for recipes. And so I'm typing all these recipes down, and I'm like, well, if I'm going to go through all this trouble of typing all these recipes out, I might as well write a cookbook. And God was like, but it can't just be a cookbook. It has to be a devotional cookbook. Like, you need to tell your story. You need to have motivation in there. Inspire people to go through the trenches, because it is hard to lose weight. It is hard to keep showing up when you don't see results the first week. And it's hard to know, like, it took you years to get to where you are, and so now you want to change, and that's great, but it's going to take years for you to change that. So there's a lot of scripture and just me telling my stories. I tell the one about me walking to my neighbor's house. I tell the one about all the accidents I've been in, and I tell a lot of different little snippets of my life of how God has showed up and carried me when I didn't want to walk on my own. And He's always given me the desire for more. And I think if He gives anybody just a little desire to be better, that's all they need. It started and moving towards the person that they want to become. And I'm still climbing that ladder. I still don't know who God wants me to be, but I'm just going to keep climbing until I get there.
I love this. Okay. And so what is your book, cookbook devotional called, and where can people find it?
It's a Faithfully Fit devotional cookbook, and it's on my website, faithfulfitness.shop.
Perfect. And we'll put these obviously all in the show notes. And where can people find your fitness and Instagram?
So Jody Evans Fit is my IG handle, and that's where you can find me. Just shoot me a DM or an email or Facebook, Jody Evans.
Amazing. Thank you so much for today's conversation. That was emotional and beautiful, and you're such an inspiration, and your story is so profound. And I love that you're like a living, walking ministry for God's work.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it too. I wasn't intending on crying, but you know, that's okay.
Gives everybody else permission to feel the feels.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love what you're doing. Keep doing it. It's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I'm excited to hear what's moved and inspired you. You can connect with me on Instagram at Corey Lee, where I share more on my personal story from rock bottom and faithless to living a sober life as a mom, a wife, and a business owner, and ways that I am learning to deepen my faith and submit to God's will. I absolutely love when you leave a rating and a review and share with your pals, as it helps spread the experience, strength, and hope this podcast delivers to more people. Don't forget to check out the show notes for anything mentioned and follow the podcast so that when the next episode drops, you are notified. We heal one day at a time, my friends. See you next week.